Welcome to the Modern Gen X Woman podcast, where we're talking about the X factor modern women bring to work and life. I'm Jackie Gadeen.
And I'm Amy Bishop. We're decoding the DNA of success, and we're doing it with flair, attitude,
and a sprinkle of badassery.
Get ready for candid conversations, untold stories, and a dose of unfiltered inspiration.
Because in this space, the X factor isn't just a variable. It's a force that reshapes the narrative. Let's reimagine what it means to be a modern woman, a modern professional, and a modern leader.
You guys are in for a treat.
This week, we are interviewing the amazing Carol Montgomery. Well, so let's back up. Mimi and I met Carol over the summer at another conference, and she is hysterical and one of the warmest, most wonderful women that I have met. We have met, and she's a comedian.
So yesterday, Jackie and I were working on something completely different. We both had our heads down and working. And I look up at her and I go, I really like Carol. I don't know her. And she goes, Carol's good people.
She is good people. And considering humor makes everything better.
My core value.
Right. And I have been feeling so tense that this couldn't have come at a better time because Carol is so funny, so witty. And the best part is she's 60 plus years old and really embraces, embodies what that means to be a woman of a certain age.
Yes.
Because let
so
me
it's
tell
so
you,
relatable. Her
the
comedy.
Sneezing, the peeing in your pants.
Like, it's so relatable, right? And I don't fart. You do?
No. Actually, I do. But I also think she's the queen of making fun of and poking fun of women 50 plus, but adoring us, right? Because she is one.
Yeah.
And really, you know, first of all, I love humor that's all about comedy.
Yes.
I mean, comedy. Yeah. Sorry. I love comedy that it's is all about observation.
Yes,
sorry,
yes,
that's
yes.
what I meant to
yeah.
say. So yeah. I love
like Seinfeld.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. Seinfeld, where you take something that you observe very innocently and you find the humor in it. And I think I like that most because my mom finds the humor in everything. So I feel like it's very much like a warm bowl of oatmeal in the morning on a cold day. It's just,
I don't know where that's coming from.
It
reminds me also of David Sedaris. He's great.
He's
so funny.
He is so funny.
But he's the same way. He takes like these, and Carol's this way too, like the obvious.
Right.
And then it's just, it hits home. And that's why it's so funny. And it also helps because let's face it, a lot of things that we're dealing with, like peeing in your pants is not really that funny. But when you can make it funny, it feels better. You know?
Yeah. So this interview goes deep into lots of aspects of Carol's life from when she was a young comedian trying to break into this very male dominated industry to taking her son on the road with her while he was an infant and to today where she is a producer for the Funny Women of a Certain Age series that is on Showtime. So Carol headlined in clubs and colleges across the U.S. and starred in two different Vegas production shows. In fact, the Las Vegas Sun called Carol one of Vegas's premier comics. She's written, directed, and starred in Showtime's special Funny Women of a Certain Age, featuring comic headliners over the age of 50. Carol is a respected veteran, a stand-up comedian of the stand-up comedy scene nationwide, an accomplished director and producer, and proudest of her 11 comedy tours with the Armed Forces Entertainment. So really a woman who gives back. You don't want to miss her as she travels across the country. You don't want to miss her show, Funny Women of a Certain Age. Come and check her out. As a woman of a certain age herself, she doesn't take anything too seriously. But one of my favorite things about Carol is how she says anyone who tells her she can't gives her the fuel to know that she can. So without further ado, we're bringing you Carol Montgomery. Hello, Carol. Welcome to the Modern Gen X Wooden Podcast.
Yes, I thank you. I've been waiting. We've been waiting a long time to do this.
We have been. We met Carol at the Three Tomatoes event. I guess it was early spring, like late spring, early summer. And she had us in stitches. And she also had us really, everything we do is about how do we promote women 40 plus and everything that
not everything you do, but you have a very important message and show specifically to elevating women over 50 and women of a certain age. And we had to have you on the podcast, so we're so happy you're here.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thrilled to be here. Anything to empower women is right up my alley.
Yeah, me too. And I...
Oh, my puppy. That's all right. He's being dramatic. He is absolutely fine.
Oh,
he's so cute, right?
He's very
cute. He's a little bit of a drama queen. So I rest assured, he was not hurt. Okay. He was just being jostled around and
didn't like it.
We also promote dog safety.
We do. We're animal rights activists too. So Carol, we want to just start by sharing with our audience, when did you know you wanted to be on stage? Like, what was that moment? Do you remember the moment, or where did it really become a draw for you to be on stage and want to be a comedian?
Well, that's actually a great question, because I looking back over my life, because I'm 65 years old, and I look back at, because people ask that, but I started doing stand-up probably, I think 21 years old. But when I wanted, when I realized that I wanted to be on stage, it's even earlier than that. So my dad was a bartender in the summertime in the Catskill Mountains. And if you know, if your audience knows about the Catskill Mountains, back in the 60s, that was the place for comedy.
Dirty Dancing, Mrs. Maisel.
It really was that. And I, you know, my dad was the bartender. So when I'd sit and hang out with my dad when he was setting up the bar in the afternoon, and I met all the comedians that were working at the Catskills at that point. I met Rodney Dangerfield when he was Jack Roy. He hadn't even changed his name. This is how long ago. This is the early 60s.
Wow.
So, and one of the things that they did, which is so funny, they had a day camp. And because we were employees' kids, because we were the employees' kids, they would let us do day camp. And one time we were doing a talent show. And this is the moment I think I decided I want to be a comedian. There was a show called the Soupy Sales Show,
which was also in the process.
Yeah, Soupy Sales. And he had a puppet called Pookie. And he used to do these stories with Pookie, and Pookie would be behind him acting out the stories. So me and my 7 or 8 year old little brain, when they said, "What do you want to do for the talent show, Carol?" I went, "I'm going to reenact Red Riding Hood," which is what they had done. But what had happened was, is that it was just one person. It was the puppet. So he would say Red Riding Hood, and the puppet would run and get a hood. So I basically reenacted the whole thing. And the response I got, I still remember that response. They thought I was a genius. They didn't know I was ripping off something from Zoomy Sales. So I think that's really where it started, when I was around 7 or 8 years old. And my dad, like I said, was a bartender. He was a very, very funny man. So, you know, we used to watch, you know, the Bowery Boys and Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy. We used to watch that Sunday mornings. You know, there were only 4 channels back then.
Yeah.
Kiddies, there were only 4 channels. You had to get up and turn the channel off. And Sunday mornings, that's what I would watch. And then my father turned back to the Marx Brothers. So I from an early age, I didn't know it was a viable career until I got into my 20s.
So when you had that moment on stage, what did that feel like? Was it the reaction that got you excited? Was it just the acting and being on stage? Was it the creativity? Or was it a combination of all of those things?
I think back then, being so young, I think it was the reaction that I got, that people were laughing and they just thought I was so... And, you know, and it stood with me for a long, long time, because I was always the wise ass and the loud mouth and all that stuff. And, you know, basically, like, I'm writing a solo show right now called I Am My Father's Son.
Brilliant.
Because I really am. Except for the fact that I have boobs, you know, I really was his son. So I really emulated my dad. And my dad was a very big and loud person. And which is funny, because when I'm on stage, I'm basically my father when I'm on stage. So the joy of making people laugh, there's no better feeling than making people laugh.
Oh, well, yeah, that's interesting. You talked about your dad because I'm curious. You know, you then decided that you wanted to go into comedy, and which was very male dominated. You're talking about 45
years. Still is.
Still is, right? Was your dad afraid? Like, was he worried? What was your dad's reaction? I'm sure he was supportive, I would assume, but what was his reaction knowing that you were going to be around a lot of men all the time that were drunk and drinking? And
oh, well, my father didn't care about that. Okay. My father knew I could hold my own.
Okay.
I, you know, one of the things that is very, my father actually said this about me and my son. When my son was a little boy, my father pulled me over and go, "He's afraid of you." I said, "Yeah, he better be. I'm his mother." No, like, so he never worried about that. What's interesting about what you just asked me, they were supportive. They were supportive later on. When my dad and mom didn't come see me for 2 years. And years later, when I said to my mom, "Why didn't you and daddy come see me?" My mother said, "My father was afraid I was going to bomb."
You are internalizing that you were, right. Your parents weren't supporting you, and he
right.
just knew that he couldn't handle it if you weren't great, because his heart would break.
Right. And so years later, when I did my first TV show, which was a local show on Fox called Comic Strip Live, it was local, but it did play.
I remember it.
Yeah.
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 And I called him after the show had aired from a payphone, because mm-hmm. we didn't have cell phones back then. And I said, and he actually gave me such a sweet compliment. He goes, "I'm so proud of you. Now I know what it feels like when a father watches his son hit a home run in Yankee Stadium."
I love that.
That's yeah. awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, and they were my biggest supporters. They, both of them were very, once, you know, and it, what, the heartbreaking thing for me is when I finally, when I came up with Funny Women of a Certain Age, and we shot the first special at the Bell House in Brooklyn. They were not there because they had both had passed at that point, but all three specials are dedicated to my parents.
I love that. That speaks volumes.
Oh yeah. A lot of people want to blame their parents for everything that went wrong in their lives. And look, they were not great parents. They were just, but you know, when you become a parent, you realize, oh, this is hard. There's no manual for it. So, and I know I've made mistakes in my own son's life. So of course they made mistakes, but I honestly can say, and like I said, they were not the best. I can honestly say that I know how much they loved me. Yeah. I know both of them love me very much. So that really, and I say that on stage sometimes, you know, when we're talking, I just did a show, was it a parent? I don't remember. I can't remember what day it is. But it was a show about parenting. And I was the oldest one that had the oldest kids. And I said, "Listen, in the end, as long as you love them, that's the only thing you can take away from it. The games and the toys and all that stuff, it doesn't matter. As long as they know you love you." And so that's how I feel about my parents. I know my parents love me. You know, I wish there were things that I wish they could have done different, but okay.
Right.
Right. I think having that perspective, right, and that openness to say that, "Listen, they weren't perfect, but I know they loved me, and it's not easy. They were human."
Yeah.
Right. That really eliminates so much pressure and probably years of therapy, I would imagine. Right.
Right. Right. Right. I just, you know, and everyone has... You know, like my sister has a different view than I do. I think she's less angry now than she was back when we were kids. But it was just like, you know, I look back and see what they were. Having children is not easy.
Right.
And nobody tells you. And back then, it really, you know, there were, you know, I mean, I played in front of my apartment building, you know, with the other kids.
Right.
You know, people could have just came with the white van and scooped us all up, and nobody would care.
Right. And they wouldn't have known you were missing for a very long time.
Oh, right. They would have been like, "Didn't he go over to Joey? Didn't they go over to Joey's house to play?" And like, and Joey's mom would be like, "Well, weren't they at Carol's house?" And like, two months later, "Where are the kids?"
Right. Yeah. Now today I'm like, "What are you doing? Where are you going?
Who
are you
going to be with?
You track them on the phone."
Oh.
You know.
I always joke that I should have chipped my son. I would have put a chip like a dog in him.
Yeah,
but oh, it's absolutely true. I always tell the story that, you know, he's a grown man now. He's 31 years old. But if I'm better now that he's an adult, but you know, like I always say this, that After we, like when you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't go back to sleep. That's not the, that's the worst time in the world, because you're just, your brain is just thinking every horrible thing. So the only way I go back to sleep is I look on his, on his Instagram, and if I see the green dot, or it says active 5 minutes ago, I'm like, all right, he's home, he's safe.
Yeah, we're good.
You know, he's a grown man. So, I mean,
it still happens.
I would
though.
Imagine that never, I don't have children, but I would imagine that never leaves you.
It right? never leaves you. It never, ever, 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 ever leaves you.
Is he in comedy? I'm curious. Did he follow in your
He's a musician.
Okay.
He runs a couple of venues around the city, a couple of rock venues. He works in different rock venues in different. Sometimes he manages, sometimes he does merch, sometimes he does hospitality, and he still does music. But, you know, it's, it, I mean, I always joke, I'm waiting for him to you know, to say, I want to be a comedian. I'll be like, what took you so long? You know, because he's got a sense of humor, and he's got a really brutal sense of humor, which is great. I taught him well. But no, he's in the business, you know.
Right.
You know, my mother-in-law is a retired Broadway pianist. And she's a conductor. So and my husband works on Broadway and is also a musician. So this is show business is the family business.
I was going to say, and it probably has to be, because if you were a comedian and he was something where he was working days, you'd never see each other. Same with your son. So now you're like, oh, we can have family dinner at 2 p.m. Right?
Like, exactly. Exactly. And that's funny you say that. Like, we're meeting today to have dinner at 5:30.
Yeah.
So before he goes to work. So yeah, I mean, that's how you do it. But yeah. I mean, he just finished writing a screenplay that people are looking at, you know, so he's in the business, you know, I mean, it is, you know.
Creative business, a very creative family. So I know that you're a writer, obviously you're a comedian, you're a writer, you're an actor. You're also doing like an entrepreneur, obviously. How do you do it all? Like, how do you manage all these facets when it just gets hard, right? So how do you manage it all?
Well, I don't, that's another great question. I don't really know how I do it. I just do it. Mm. When you say it that way, I'm like, oh, I'm tired. Why am I doing all that stuff?
Right.
But, I've always been a type A, and I've always done everything by myself. And the thing about this particular show, this Funny Women of a Certain Age, is that, you know, in show business, people will tell you that everyone has projects, everyone has ideas, and you throw enough of them up on the wall, something's going to stick. So from the moment I came up with this idea, everyone went, oh, this is the one. And so I came up with the idea, I want to say it was September of 2017. We showcased for all the networks in 2018, and we had the first special running in 2019. So from 2017, from the moment I came up with the idea, I get up every morning, I'm on my computer, I'm working on the show, I'm working on ideas. So I don't know how not to do that.
Yeah.
So, but the important thing about what I do is that, you know, we're in a very, I don't know if the word treacherous is the right term.
I would go with treacherous. Yeah.
But for women, you know, there are people trying to say that women should just be, you know, moms and be baby makers and just go out and do all that stuff. And I'm going to go down swinging because, you know, so the important thing is, the reason I bring that up is, don't ever let anybody tell you can't do something because you're a woman or because you're older. That was the big deal, is that I'm 65. I came up with this idea when I was 59 years old. Right. Think about it. Right. Female comics over the age of 50. We had a deal with a network within a year. So
that's amazing.
Especially but that's the thing,
right? They don't always, Hollywood does not always recognize women of a certain age.
Right?
So for them to lean right into this is, I also think, reflective of the new times that we're seeing and the demand that we're seeing for,
absolutely,
you know, ourselves on screen.
Right. Absolutely. And that's why I say, you know, that's why when people, I used to say this even when I was younger, people used to say, well, you can't do that. And I was like, watch me.
Yeah. Yes.
You tell me I can't do it. That's like lighting a fire right under there. And I'm like, here we go. So, you know, like I think that as I've gotten older, I will be honest that I do so much that, like, I'm hiring an assistant at the end of the year, finally, because there's just so much going on. But, you know, this is, my career is my life. I mean, my son is my life. My husband is my life. But this is what defines me. This, the brand that I created, you know, I'm trying to be this leading force in helping older female comics. Because it's like you said at the beginning of the show, it's still a male dominated. Do you know, I don't know if it's happening still, but about 6 months ago, somebody had posted on one of the social medias that the major clubs in Los Angeles, their weekend shows, there was not one female comic in the major clubs, which was mind blowing that in 2023, now in New York, we're really lucky. You know, the clubs that I work, there's always a woman on the show. Sometimes there's two or three women on the show, but it shouldn't be. Why is it like, oh, there's a woman on the show? Meanwhile, there'll be 17 men on a show.
Right.
That's not considered. So it, for me, it really is trying to help older women go, oh, okay, you know, you can do whatever you want. Cause it's not just doing comedy. It's basically, you know, I'm not dead yet, as I like to say.
Thankfully. Yeah. Do you find, what do you think is the reason why there's still such a barrier? Is it the number of female comedians? Is it the bookers that are men that refer men? Because there's that referral gap that happens. What do you think some of that reasoning that they're not having as many women in those positions?
Well, what's interesting is, like, when I do the live show and we play big theaters, I always say this, that, you know, back in when I started, there weren't a lot of women. So if there were 50 women in the entire country, you could understand why there was maybe one woman on a show. There's thousands now. There's right. thousands and thousands of female comics who are good. But it's that old school of, I don't know what it is, like on the first special, because we had these little interstitials where we talked about what it was like to be a woman in comedy. And Carrie Louise had this great story about that one of her friends was in the room of a booker. And somebody had canceled. So somebody said, oh, hey, why don't you get Carrie? And the booker goes, oh, she's got three kids, you know, and like all this stuff. And then somebody suggested a guy. And he goes, oh, yeah, he just had a baby. I should book him.
Unreal.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm paraphrasing the story, I'm sure. Right. But the point is, it's still very much like that. We keep trying to knock these doors down, and then another door pops up. It's literally like, you know, that blow up clown that you used to have when you punch, and it would
That's
what keeps happening. You keep punching and they keep popping back up, and it's like, when are you going to just admit that? Of course I'm biased, but I mean, there's some really great male comics right now that are coming up that I love to death. But for the most part, the people that are coming up with the more interesting material and themes are the females. But you know, it's like I said, it's an old boys club, and they don't want to upset the status quo.
Yeah.
Well, you have really upset the status quo. You know, what comes to mind are a couple of things. One is, I would imagine that women comics have a unique perspective that other women mm-hmm. can relate to. Right. And it really, I think it's very short-sighted, because if you think about market share or reaching an audience, right, even from a business perspective, missing out on half the population. I mean, it's just foolish.
Well, but what's also foolish is that, when I'm talking about this subject on stage, and I'll say to, who made the plans? The woman always makes the plans.
Right.
To this day, I mean, my husband and I have been married almost 40 years. And he, you know, somebody will say, hey, do you guys want, let me ask Carol. Does she make the plans? That's what we do. So right. The fact that you're totally negating, like what you just said, half of the population. And we're the ones, I mean, I know I'm in charge of I pay all the bills. And I would say there's a good part of women that do all that. So right. You're losing all that money. Sorry about that. That was the construction outside.
That's all right. I thought it was out my window, and I still have my dog on the lap, so anything could happen.
But it really, like, I have to say, I people say I'm a little cocky when I do this, but I really do think that if it wasn't for me, Hacks never would have been on. Hacks would not have gone on to air.
Right.
Because, because of the Jean Smart plays an older female comic. If it wasn't for funny women of a certain age, nobody would have thought, because that the first special was Showtime's highest rated special of 2019. So everyone
Those are incredible numbers too.
Yeah. So I like to think that we had something to do with it, and that was a huge hit, and you know, Schitt's Creek was a huge hit, and you know, like it's like older women. There's a huge market because most of our children are grown, and if they're not, they're about to leave, and so we're not worried about the, you know, the. I mean, I still give my son money. I mean, I'll probably give him money for the rest of my life, but you know what I mean? Like, there's not that, you know, there's something that happens when you're in your 30s and 40s, because you're raising your family and everything you're doing is basically for your kid. At least that's what it was for me. I mean, I still don't buy stuff for myself.
Right.
But when you get in your 50s and your 60s, the kids are older and you don't have to do that. And they're either done with college or they're going to college. It's like, wait a minute, I want to do stuff for me. And that's the demographic that they're missing. There's so much money in Hollywood. I say that all the time. Hollywood is losing millions of dollars by not doing more shows with older women and older men too. Like The Golden Bachelor, that's another one.
Yeah.
That show never would have happened without funny women of a certain age. Absolutely not.
No, and it almost didn't happen either, which is so interesting, right? So I don't know how it's doing, but it's one of those things where I feel like there's this big shift, and even the people who watch TV, the younger generation, they're not watching shows the same way. They do a lot of TikTok, a lot of YouTube. And so if you want something to hit, it has to appeal to women of a certain age or men of a certain age, because that's the trend. That's who's still watching traditional content, right? As opposed to like fast snippet ADHD content.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I joined TikTok. I still don't know why I'm on it. somebody said, well, you know, they do a lot of twerking. I said, if I do a twerking video, I'm going to pull out my back. The ambulance is going to come. It's not going to be pretty.
Right. We always said when TikTok became big and someone was like, you got to get on TikTok, I was like, I am too old to point at words. Like, I don't want to point at words and dance.
Yeah. I hate that.
You know,
it's
just not my thing. But I can see, you know, for some people it is. And I think that's the beauty of where we are, even in our society, is there is so much content consumption, depending on how you want to consume it, that there's something for everybody, but there has to be enough of what our generation wants.
Yep. You said something, Carol, that jumped out at me before, and I wanted to circle back. You said something about breaking the status quo. How do you break the status quo? What does that feel like? How do you do it? Do you wake up one day and say, I'm going to break the status quo, or is it something that just happens?
Well, but you know what? Like, it's so funny. Like, you know, talking about gender and roles and all that stuff, I always, you know, in the show, I talk about the fact that I never considered myself a girl. I just was a person. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize I was a female comedian until I became a comedian, and I was different than the guys. So it wasn't that I went out looking to break it. I was just like, well, why can't I never understood when someone said you can't do something. I was like, oh, like I said, you know, watch me. You know, I was one of the first, you know, like a lot of women have kids now. But remember now, I've been doing stand-up almost as probably, yeah, over 40 years, because I started before I met my husband. So I was pregnant on the road with my son, and there were not a lot of women. There were maybe five or six women who had kids back then. I took him on the road with me. I brought him on stage with me. No one ever said you can't do that. I just did it because it's my life. I'm breastfeeding a kid. If I'm in Hawaii, my breasts don't stretch that far if he's in California.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm not a big believer when someone says, well, you can't do that, or, well, that's the way it is. It's like, why is it that way? Why can't it be this way?
Right. Yeah, love that.
And it's, you know, sometimes it gets exhausting because you feel like you have to push the boulder uphill in order for it to, right? So what might have been an easier path, a less treacherous path for somebody else, does become harder for us because we do it, but it's not as easy, and it makes it, everything is like, you almost feel like a responsibility, probably, like, I'm doing this and I have a responsibility, even if you don't feel that way. So for me, I always think about that, even in all of these industries where there are more women in male-dominated industries, they feel there's this like, okay, I'm in, but it's taking me longer to get there, and it takes me a lot longer to stay there. And that's really, you know.
Yeah, no, well, there's, you know, there's somebody said the line about that Ginger Rogers was as good as Fred Astaire, and she did it with heels.
Yeah.
And backwards.
And backwards.
Right.
So, I mean, it is true. You know, I've reached a great point in my career and in my life, and I think that's a mixture of a lot of things. A lot of it is age. A lot of it is, I don't really care if you think I'm funny or not funny. I don't care. I know I'm good.
Yeah.
I know. And I also know that I created something amazing. So, I don't have I don't have that need to prove anymore the way when you're younger. When you, you know, I remember because I've been back, I lived in Vegas for 10 years and raised my son there for a while I was starring in a couple of shows. And when we moved back to New York, it was like I had to start all over again. And I remember walking into a comedy club and I was the only woman there, and there were all these guys sitting at the bar, all the comics, and they were ignoring me because, you know. And then I went on and I did my spot, and then, you know, I did really well, and they all wanted to be my friend as soon as I got off the stage.
And it's approve like, yourself. It's like it's, yeah. It's like an initiation, right?
Yeah. But at this point in my career, I don't care. I really don't. I mean, I you know, people say you have to care about it. I said, do I care if the audience has a good time? Absolutely. But there's something about being older and having this success that I had is that I proved already that I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And so when I, you know, I mean, I still have bad shows. You know, there's times I'll walk out and I'm like, oh, they're not going to nope. And there's just, that's what live comedy is.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, you never know what group of people are going to show up and either love you or hate you. But I would say, you know, after the thousands and thousands of shows I've made, I don't really worry. The fear of, oh my God, if I don't do well, someone's not going to like me. I don't care.
Right. It's inevitable, right? It's just like anything else. You're not going to, if you could be awesome all the time, right, then you would be the only person in the world who could do that, right? Now, a baseball player can't even hit a ball every single time. Right. So why do we think as comedians?
This pressure on ourselves, actually for everything. One thing that you said that I think is very relevant for women 50 plus, 60 plus, even 40 plus, is we get to a point in our lives where we don't really give
a shit.
Yeah, about anyone else. About not anyone, but like what they think of us, because I know I'm good. I know what I've gone through to get here. Right. And so I think that's something very refreshing about being the age we're at.
Yeah. But women in general, we always feel that we have to apologize.
Yes.
I mean, if I tell you how many times I walk down the street and a woman bumps into me and goes, I'm sorry. And I just want to grab and go, stop saying I'm sorry.
Right.
Stop saying I'm sorry. You know, like that type of stuff, or that, you know, there's this need for that we've been brought up to, that don't rock the boat.
And yeah. Yes.
Not only have I rocked the boat, I've turned the boat over.
I can't
do that. It's not in me to be like this small person.
And what's great about that is you're big. You're bigger than life. You're stepping into it, and you're unbeknownst to you, or maybe you do know, but people see themselves in you, right? Comedians look up to you and say, oh, everyone needs to have, not needs to. It is always better if someone is doing something that you want to do ahead that you can say, like, I see that it's happened. I see that I can get there. If you can't, you could be the first, right? But that is powerful, this fact that you're the beacon. You're the lighthouse for so many women, right? And you're like, if I could do it back then, you can do it now, right? And don't say no, and don't take no for an answer, and don't let someone bully you, and don't get intimidated, and recognize you're going to bomb, and that's okay. You know, everyone bombs.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting being older. And, you know, because, you take it personal, you take everything personal when you're young and when you're a woman, you just do, whether it's dating or a job or whatever, your friends, everything is personal. But you get to a point in your, like you said, even after 40, you're just like, wait a minute, who do I have to prove anymore? You know, right. And it's like, I would love to see women not be so hard on themselves in their
20s. Me
too. Yes. Me too. And even younger.
Yeah.
It's I'm just so glad I had a son. I know that's terrible, but to navigate having a daughter in this day and age, I would be like,
do it every day.
15-year-old.
Oh, gosh, so you're right in it.
I'm right in it. It's tough. It's
tough. Yeah. You know, because just the whole, like, I see little girls. I've seen young girls on the subway, and they're doing that with their phone and their selfies, and they're trying to look like they're 30, and they're, and it's like, oh, stop. Be kids, because you're going to look back and go, oh, why was I doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. The message that, like, when I was growing up, the big role model for women was Twiggy.
Yeah. Yes. Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and so everybody had to be thin, and I'm not ever going to be Twiggy.
Right. Yes.
You know, even if I stopped eating, that's not my genetics.
Me neither.
So, but that's when it all started in the 60s. About looking like those women. And I, like, my sister would always be like, my sister's a bit loves clothes and fashion. And she'd be like, well, this is what they're wearing. I'm like, I don't care what they're wearing. I'm wearing a t-shirt and jeans because that's right. What I like.
Right.
So, and that was in the 60s. I can't even imagine what it must be like now with the fake eyelashes, you know, the girls with the eyelashes that are like, I do a joke like this on stage. They go, listen, okay, I know you want attention. But that's not where they're not looking at your eyes. So if you want attention with these lashes, put them on your tits.
Yeah.
And then you'll get what you want. But it's like mind blowing. Like you see these young women and you're like, why are you wearing? You're 12 years old. Why are you looking forward? It's amazing.
It's fast forward. I think every generation has it. I think the access to seeing what an adult girl woman looks like gets younger and younger, right? So because I remember being young and looking at Cosmopolitan magazine and wanting to be like Cindy Crawford and you know, and wanting to paint my mole. I'm like, oh, I have the mole here. I wish it was down here. It was like all of that stuff, right? So we all do that, but I think the difference is it starts so young because they're on devices so much younger. They're getting these messages fed to them so much younger, and it becomes really hard. And it really hurts their confidence. And girls are innately less confident than boys, and I don't know what it is, but from a very young age, it's proven to be the fact. So you know, we need to build that up instead of tearing it down.
Yeah, I mean, I do a whole piece about, you know, young women should like themselves the way they are because of the media and the beauty industry and the fashion industry. What people don't understand about all of that is they do not care about you. Mm-hmm. These people and the celebrities and fashion and beauty, the only thing they care about is what they can get out of you financially.
Yes.
So if you can go and get a young girl hooked on Sephora when she's 12, they're going to still get dollars from her when she's in her 50s because that's what she's been told to use. So it's a huge scam, but you know, how do you do that? You know, I remember, so my son's 31, so he's a millennial, right? And we were talking one day when he just started dating they were dating, they were 12. But they, I remember saying to him, and you know, and remember, I've been a feminist and all my whole life. And I said, so why do you like this girl so much? And he goes, because she's pretty. And I was like, oh my God. I failed. How did I fail? Now, the women he dates now are way more the type of woman I thought he'd be with, you know, like real good, like, you know, like don't care about the. But back then, even at his age, he was 12, 13 years old. All of his friends were like, well, this girl's pretty. And this girl, it's like, you know, not that the girls, I mean, the woman he's dating now is gorgeous, but she doesn't feel the need to show it.
To feed into it. Right. So you said you've been doing comedy for over 44 years, right? How do you keep your, two things, right? Like, one is, where do you find your most creative ideas, right? Because comedy is truly about creativity. And then how do you keep finding new things to do and material to use?
Well, the first thing is that there really is a myriad of things that you can make fun of. You really can. That's the first thing. Like I said, because we're living in a very treacherous world right now, I feel that my job is for lack of a better word, I just tell my dick jokes and that's it. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Common ground. There's no political stuff in there. You don't know which side I'm on. I mean, obviously I'm a feminist, but you know, I just keep it very, you know, I want people to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's always sweet stuff that you can relate to, you know, like, right, you know, like there's, I'm working on, like right now, like I said, I'm really working on the piece about self-esteem. I'll say it. And then if you can't, you'll just bleep it out. But the thing about confidence in women is that when I was young, I used to think when I was 20, I thought it was ugly. I thought it was fat. It was stupid. Now I look at pictures of myself. At 65, I look at those pictures and I go, I was adorable.
Yeah.
I should have blown everyone.
Yeah.
And then I stop and I look at the young girl and that is my gift to you.
Right. That's amazing. I love
but
that.
But do you know what I mean? Because we really don't. I mean, like, I look at pictures of myself. I was like, oh my God, it was gorgeous.
Right.
And I thought I was so ugly.
Yeah,
and that's the society stuff.
That's totally the society stuff. So do you find yourself telling the dick jokes and doing all of that? What is it like to be a comedian today with all of the canceling going on, with all of the don't say that, the is there a lot of pressure? Like, or do you just because you're not political, you just steer clear of that anyway? But what is that like, and how does it impact the art that is comedy?
Okay, that's you really, by the way, great questions. I mean,
thank you,
very great questions. I try to just steer clear of anything. First of all, you know, I don't do anything racist, homophobic. I mean, that to me is my you know, like, I when my son was growing up, he was allowed to say the F word. But it had to be funny, and it couldn't be racist or homophobic, or, you know, what we call punching down in our business.
Yeah.
Some people do it, and they've been very successful with it. It's not what I want to do. I don't want to fight at this point in my life. I want to just make people laugh.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had somebody come up to me, an older woman, who said, she said, I didn't like one of the jokes. I was very offended. I said, okay, what do you want me to do about it?
Right.
I mean, what do you want me to do about it? You know, then thank you for letting me know, because that's the biggest problem right now with the internet. And the internet has been amazing for a myriad of reasons. The fact that I can do my banking in my pajamas makes me happy. I don't have to leave the house.
Me too. Slippers.
Right. But it's also opened up the fact that everyone has an opinion.
Yeah.
And they will let you know. And you're like, okay, thank you. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to stop what I'm doing? Like, oh my God, I upset you.
Everyone's going to upset someone at some point. That's just the reality of it.
Right. You don't know. Yeah. And nobody, but it has to be funny. I don't believe in, you know, like I have to even, you know, I do a joke when I'm picking on a young person, I go, I know that, picking on you because you're young is a form of ageism. I said, I'm not going to stop, but I know that it's a form of ageism. Right. You know, I'm very aware of what I say, you know, to the point that, but I don't do anything that like if I have a joke that I think is funny, I'm not worried whether or not it's going to cancel me.
Right.
You know, I do have friends that are like, oh, the audience is just, I look at everyone the same. Like, mm-hmm. I like playing to my demographic, which is 40 and up. But you know what? At all three specials, half of the audiences at the tapings were in their 20s and 30s. So it's not. So I don't go out and stand there and go, oh, I better not do this joke because that person's not going to like it, or they're too young, or they're too old. I just do what I do. And if you don't like it or you do like it, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And then I move on. The problem with cancellation, I will say, going back to what we were just talking about, because everyone has an opinion.
Right.
So they feel like they go, well, I'm going to show you. I didn't like that joke. So I'm going to cancel you. And I'm like, okay, go. You know, there's a point. Look, over the years that, you know, starting early, you know, from the beginning of time, I guess, there have been bad people doing bad things. And in our society, like, you know, a lot of people, a lot of, you know, like the rock and roll industry in the 60s and 70s. I mean, they were horrific to women.
Right.
That was the 60s and the 70s. Are you really going to cancel Elvis Presley? Was, you know, according to
being Priscilla, a 14-year-old.
Right.
Exactly. Oh, but they weren't doing anything. But the fact is, I'm not defending him for doing that. But nobody cared back then. So because there's so many people now, like, well, Elvis Presley should be, you know, first of all, he's dead. So dead,
cancel him.
You know, and
his daughter's
people,
dead too. So like, what else?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Who cares now?
Who cares now? Right. So and you know, and if people are listening, going, well, that's a horrible. It's like, look, that's the way society was. It is great. That I mean, there were things that happened to me when I was a young comic. I was very lucky. I was very lucky because everyone kind of, I don't know, I always joke about this with my husband, because I've basically been with my husband pretty much my entire career. So I don't know if that was like the bro rule, like they couldn't hit on me because I was taken. I don't really know. So I've had incidences where I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I give off the illusion of don't mess with me. So most of the time people don't. But sometimes you go, all right, well, that's just the way it was. You know, I don't think that because somebody, I think everybody deserves a second chance. If someone did something bad back then, because now it's considered bad, how about giving them another chance?
Right.
So there are so many movies from the 30s and 40s. If you watch them now, you're like, oh, I mean, the Marx Brothers, my idols.
Right. Little rascals.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think a lot of it is we've lost the context. Right.
Right. And that's a good point.
It's truly, you know, when you know, you do better when you know better. Right.
Right.
And we're always
right.
being enlightened as humans and as a culture, we hope. And I'm sure there are things we're doing right now that 10 years ago, you know, 10 years from now, we'll say, oh my God. Right. But we didn't know, you know, it's just. We learn and if
we're
adapting
evolving.
As you learn, that's the difference, right? It's like, oh, now I realize that how that could be insensitive. Let me adapt, right? It's not
right.
like-
And most people will do that. But then you get people that the people, first of all, I really do believe this, that people are so angry now in general across the board. And I think without getting political,
yeah,
I think it's because we have people in power on both sides that have gotten away with horrible things and they're not in jail. If you,
right.
if you, any three of us or any of our listeners did half of what has been going on with the people in power, we'd be in jail for the rest of our lives.
Right.
Right.
And so I think what happens is when people see that, people have now an attitude like, well, you know, if so-and-so can get away with it, or this one's getting away with it, why can't I get away with it?
Yeah,
and
right.
so people are angry and they're mad and everything. And there's a lot more crime because of it, because people are like, well, all right. So, you know, maybe I want, you know, and then they forget that they don't have the lawyers that people in power
right.
do.
Right.
And like
right.
I said, when I say people in power, I want people to understand this. I'm talking about across the boards here.
Absolutely. Not just entertainment, not just politics. People
no.
in power across the board. It could be corporate America. It could be
right.
politics. Right. Absolutely.
Look at the. Let's just talk about the people who aren't paying taxes, the billionaires that aren't paying taxes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, you know, I'm one of those people that has every receipt I've ever had.
Us
I could
too.
Make a house.
Yeah, us too.
You know, with 6 bedrooms, just with the receipts. And I write everything down. And these guys are like, yeah, I'm not going to. So when you have that, how do you teach your children to be good human beings if they're like, well, everyone else is getting away with it? Right.
That's exactly right. And then it threatens their sense of fairness, right? Because that's one of the things that make people go into fight or flight is if their fairness is threatened. So, you know, I had this situation with my daughter last week where she was in school in her class and the boys and the teacher were talking about, they were learning the solar system, talking about Uranus, and they were all laughing and talking about Uranus and ha ha ha. And Peyton turned around to talk to a girl in her class and say something, and she got in trouble. And she went to the teacher, was like, you got to stop talking. And she was like, she came home, she's like, he's sexist. And, you know, like she was like, he's right. And so I said to her, well, the way to say that is, you know, it feels as though there's no equality between the boys and what they can get away with and what I can get away with. And so if they're joking and being and causing ruckus in the classroom, talking about Uranus, and I'm disrupting the classroom by saying something, why is that different? So I, you know, it's early on, she could see it, and she had the voice, and I said to her, this is what you need to say, and you need to do it with respect, but if that is how you feel, that's what you want to say. And so this goes on all the time, and then they wonder why, you know, everyone's treated differently or doesn't want to follow the rules, because the rules only apply half the time or to certain people.
Did she talk to the teacher?
She did. She talked to the teacher. And what she said was, I felt as though you allowed the boys to get away with talking and being disruptive, but didn't allow me to get away with it. So she didn't say girl, boy. But he did apologize. And he did apologize to her and said, I'm sorry if that's how you felt. That wasn't my, you know. So he did try, but he didn't acknowledge that he did it. But
well, good for her. Tell her I'm very proud of her.
I will tell her. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's so important that you do that. And then, of course, tell her if she needs any help, I have a bat.
There you go. That's what I say. I'm like, I'm Italian. Don't worry, kiddo. We got it. We got this.
We got it. I make a couple of calls. Don't worry about it.
Right. That's exactly.
but it is interesting. It's so funny that you said that. So one time in the same type of vein with, like, it's just so interesting about double standards and stuff. So my son was, I want to say he was in junior, I don't remember, but he it was around the time of Columbine. Okay, so my son had decided to write a story. He was, you know, he's always creative. He wanted to do James Bond as a little boy, so he was writing this story, and his friend was loved anime, so he did an anime of James Bond with a little boy in a tux with a Tommy gun, right? So he had it in his backpack, and somebody saw it, and this kid went immediately and said, Lane has a picture of a gun in the, you know, so of course I get called in, and it was like this whole big thing and everything. And remember, this is also a school for creative arts. This wasn't like regular school.
Right, right.
So we go in, and I talk to the teacher, I said, first of all, I said, the principal, I said, this is a school for creative arts. He's writing a story that's creative. Yeah, but there's a picture, and he's got this. And she turns to Lane and she goes, well, why did your friend draw the picture of him with a gun? He goes, because he's a spotlight. And he started crying. and it was just like, okay, now you're going too much the other way. You know, like, it's the same type of thing. I'm sure you know this too. You've been around your daughter's friends. You know which ones are the good ones, and you know which ones are the ones you go, honey, you shouldn't hang out with those children.
Right, right.
Okay? My son is the child that would put daisies in guns if he was a soldier.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have it in him. So to see this woman be like, well, you know, there's got to be some repercussions for this. And I was like, okay, well, and you know, there were a few choice words said.
Yeah, me too. I've done that many.
Yep. But it is amazing because it's like, what are you teaching the kids? You know, and that was the same school where there was an incident where there was a bunch of kids with switchblades. But no, let's pick on the kid that had a picture,
right, of a gun for his story. I know it's crazy. It's a whole different world. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're doing the best to be content providers just like you in this world without getting canceled. Or if we get canceled, we'll go do something else.
You know, like I said, I know people that have been canceled. I know people that they've tried to cancel. And I think what's happening now is you're getting people. I think people in general are like, it's got to be really bad. It's like, if it's just that, you know, she was wearing a black t-shirt when it was white t-shirt day. Okay, well, we're not going to do that. Right. You know what I mean? It's a little, everyone needs to tone down.
I agree. And the crime, the punishment has to fit the crime.
Yes.
Well, also, you know, there's some meme going out. Of course, I forgot the exact word, but it's like, no one knows what somebody's going through.
Yes.
You don't know. You know, I mean, like John Lennon used to say, everybody wears a uniform. And I know what I look like when I'm walking down the street. You know, I look like a middle-aged woman. Yeah. I look vulnerable. And it's like, oh, that's adorable. Please, please mess with me. Oh, I would love for you to mess with me. But I know what I look like. But you don't know what's going on in my life.
Right.
Right.
You know, I mean, so I try doing this. I every so often I still do this. Like if I see a woman, just, and this is just strictly women to women. If I see a woman with a great outfit on, mm-hmm. or her hair looks great, I go, I tap them on the, I can't have tapped, I've done this on the subway. And you know, when you're on the subway in New York, everyone's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. You know? So it's not great. I'm not
getting up. I'm like, I love your hair. And to watch women go from, what do you want to? Oh, thank you. Well, I got it here and I did this. Yeah. And you like, you know, let's, why not try to be kind? Why not just try to, if you can, we're all just like on edge. What is going to happen? What's going to happen in the world? Why don't we just be kind? And in my case, that's why I love doing what I'm doing, is I'm making people laugh, even if it's only for an hour.
Yeah. But it changes people's lives. I mean, you can go in. Humor is one of my core values, right? And for me, I know I could be having an awful day, but if I find something funny, and it's like a release for me. I'm not really a crier. Jackie will, it's very rare, although she has seen me in tears, but it's rare. But I will burst out laughing. And for me, that's always an emotional release, right? Yeah. And it just shifts everything. And so by being able to provide people with that outlet, it's really a gift that's changing the world.
Oh, thank you. I do. And I love to laugh. I mean, you know, I'm one of the few comics I know that will sit in the back. Like I've seen, especially the women that tour with me the most are Julia Scotti and Leanne Lord. They're the women that usually, and I've toured with them now. We've done probably close to 50 shows together, and I still watch them in the back, and I still laugh, and I still go and wait for that joke, because I know the joke is coming, and I still laugh at it because they're that good.
Yeah. Right. And it's all about the presence and the timing and the, right. It's all of it. And so you get to, and you're watching art, right. Yeah. It's the same thing. I always think of it. Like if I go to the Met, I still go see the same art, even though I've seen it before, because I notice something different and I love it. And there's something familiar and comfortable with it. And it's beautiful. So it's the same thing with every kind of art.
Yeah. I mean, there are still scenes in the Marx Brothers movie that I've watched a million times. And when it comes up, I'm like laughing as if I'd never seen it before.
Right.
And but you're right. Laughter is really, really, really important. And people have to, some people have, you know, there are people in the world that don't have senses of humor. And that blows my mind.
Me too.
Oh, I don't know. I don't get that.
Me too.
You know, it's funny because in my family, like my mom is not funny. I think my father is funny. I'm funny. One of my brothers is very funny. My mom is just not funny, but she appreciates humor. Do you know what I mean? Like she'll laugh. She's not someone who's naturally is quick to come up with something funny, right?
Right.
She appreciates humor. The people that don't laugh, I don't get that.
Right.
Like they, what are they walking around with the black heart? I just
probably.
I know. It is. But it is interesting because it is, when they say sense of humor, it really is the sense of knowing what's funny and what's not.
Yeah.
What's funny to you?
Yeah.
So Carol, we could talk to you all day long, but I know that at some point we need to wrap this up. So we want to just say thank you for being on the podcast. This was
amazing. We've been talking about this for ages.
Right. And we've been talking about you. We tell everybody about you, by the way.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Every time we meet somebody, we're like, you have to watch the show. You have to go to Showtime, because we truly want to support women, and we truly want to support women 40 plus, because that's really
women of a certain age.
Yeah, women of a certain age. So
may I plug a couple of shows in January?
Absolutely. Yes, please tell everyone how to find you, where to find you, and then we'll put everything in the show notes as well, ladies.
You can go to carolmontgomery.com. That's my personal website. Funnywomenofacertainage.com is the show's website because it's a brand now. I'm a brand.
Love it. We need some t-shirts. I need my own t-shirt.
I know. Yes. I'm going to be making new t-shirts up. I promise. Right.
Yeah. You guys some. We'll order some.
But the big show that I'm really excited about, and it'll be right after this episode airs, is January 20th in Warren, Ohio, at the Robbins Theater. It's going to be me, Vanessa Hollingshead, who was on the first special, and the legendary Marsha Warfield.
Wow. Wow, that's going to be incredible. How many nights are you there?
We're just there one night. Okay. Just there one night. And it's, I cannot wait. Marsha did the third special. She was unbelievable, and I'm sure, I haven't seen her in over a year, she's gonna just be amazing. And then the following Saturday, that January 27th, is the Milford Theater in Milford, Pennsylvania, and that'll be me, Vanessa Hollingshead, and a young lady who's done the live shows named Marla Schultz. She does a bit about trying edibles for the first time. That I was so terrified to try edibles because I was like, no, it's going to end up like she basically talks about melting in the Long Island Railroad from eating too much edibles, because everyone always says, just take a bite. And then you go, well, nothing's happening. And then you eat the whole thing and then you just trip for 6 days.
Oh my God.
So we're doing those shows. And then if you go to the funnywomenofacertainage.com, you know, we're doing a bunch of tours. We're going to Florida. We're doing matinees in Florida. So how great is that for 1 o'clock in the afternoon?
I love it.
I love doing that. So we have a lot of dates coming up. And thank you. This was just lovely. I'll come back anytime. I can talk about comedy forever.
We love having you on. We have to have you back. And we have to come in the city and do drinks again soon. Because
we had a wonderful time when we did that.
Yeah, that was fun. And you guys are where? In Long Island?
Island.
We're Long Island. Okay.
So when we get off, I'll tell you, because I'm doing something in Long Island, but it'll, yeah. So I will.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Carol.
Thanks. Bye.